But I think something that happens is helpful to know about is a teaching called the four Atma Kleshas. So some of you might have heard them. The sort of basic Klesha is something like means something like disturbing emotion, and Atma is self. So these are particularly, you know, embedded, rooted turbulences that happen in us that particularly, you know, they come kind of quite soon after the basic grasp or grasping. Quite soon after that, you get these four Atma Kleshas. So they are having opinions about I, or self, opinions about I, stupidity about I, pride about I, and then self-love. Now that self-love isn't metta. It's not metta, it's attachment. Cupidity, I think, is another word for it. But self-love, attachment. So opinions about self are just opinions, opinionatedness. Stupidity about I, or spiritual ignorance, not knowing about conditionality, or even worse, actually really even worse, knowing about it but not relying on it. I mean, if you haven't come across that, and I mean, of course you're not going to, I mean, in a way that's just straightforward, not knowing. But spiritual ignorance, I think, is worse than that. It's when you know and you don't do anything about it. It's when you know about conditionality, you've even been so touched by it that you've, you know, that we've you know, said that we want to try and live from that, try and do what the Buddha's saying and live from that conditionality and emptiness that it implies. They're eyes together. The real stupidity is knowing that and not acting on it and forgetting, not relying on conditionality. So opinions about I, stupidity about I, pride about I, probably don't need to say much more about that, and then self-love.
Shit.
The word for self-love is atma sneha. It's wonderful, isn't it? Sneha. It just, that's the self-love. That's the attack. That's the stickiness, actually. That involves the kind of adherence and what we want to kind of stick on ourselves and thereby identify ourselves with. So it's atma sneha. So maybe I should just leave you with that one. We talked about it. I talked about it. Akashavana, and it was just this word sneha. What it brought to mind for me was Gollum in Lord of the Rings. You know Gollum, my precious. And he goes around and whispers, "Mine." It's when he's after the ring, isn't he? If you don't know, you must know about Lord of the Rings. You know, he's like that, isn't he? He's hungering. He does it. Gollum's wonderful for this. He's hungering after it all the time, and he's tricky. And our minds, you know, when they're eye-making and mind-making and convinced of that, they're tricky, cunning. They trick us up, they trip us up as well, and he's like that. You know, he's going and he does it with his mind. Where's my precious? And these nasty hobbitses have got it, and his whole, you know, as a character in that book, it's just one thing, and he's after it. And he's going to get it. And so I, that was what in my, I touched into my inner Gollum. I was encouraging all the others to do inner Gollums. And so every now and again you'd hear, you know, the Gollum voice would be heard, you know, kind of at various points in the retreat centre. So we were all doing my precious. But it's quite an evocative, I've quite evocative. I'll tell you what really, why that works for me. Apart from the fact I like Lord of the Rings, but why that actually touches me is that actually Gollum isn't evil. He's not an evil character. He's just ignorant. He's deluded. But he's not evil. There are evil characters in Lord of the Rings. Lord of Mordor, evil. You know, completely. Gollum isn't. He's just a human being who's been in particular circumstances, through no fault of his own, actually, if I remember the story. But he's never got out of them, and his mind is so moulded, is so kind of all-encompassing now. He's just got one fixation, and he's after it. And all the way through that, he's a touching character, actually, in the films as well, actually. It's only the film he's more touching, the way the guy, the actor, does him. But he's not evil, he's just deluded. And So maybe I'll just stop there and leave you with that, because of course in the book, you know, Gollum is Gollum, and actually at the very end he is the means by which the ring falls into the molten lava, doesn't it? I mean, he's not really reformed, because it's not like he does it as an altruistic act. He's actually still after it, grabbing it, you know, from Frodo's finger. So in the way, by doing that, he saves Frodo, then topples into the lava, and you know, that's and his, you know, his life's ended, and also the ring's ended, and then everything turns out okay. So in the story, Gollum doesn't manage, you know, to there isn't a resolution. He doesn't manage to overcome that conditioning of us. He doesn't actually manage to see through the emptiness of what the ring represents to him and the way he's grasping onto it. So there's not a resolution in the story, although he's the means for the resolution in the story. So we could at least give him credit for that. And there's the occasional little glimpse of, you could get the occasional glimpse that he's just somewhere he can lift himself out of that, but mostly he doesn't. We're in a different situation. We don't need to have an ending like that, actually. We probably already, you know, probably we're not as bad as Gollum in the first place. But don't underestimate that possibility deep down. I don't mean that, you know, because clearly, you know, it's not about us being evil. It's just about us being stupid and not relying on conditionality. And for those of us who do know about it, don't add to it by knowing and then not taking it on board. So, yeah, for Gollum it's not resolved, but for us it could be resolved. If this helps you try and resolve it here at Winterhouse Trading, then I'd be very pleased. It does help me. It does help me when I bear this in mind at Tara Loka. So I'm sure there can be some overlap. But thank you for having me, and very pleased to be here.